This is the Kratom Science Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Gallagher, blog and social media writer for KratomScience.com, your source for all things Kratom.
My guest is Drew Turner. Drew is a Kratom activist and consumer who appeared in the documentary A Leaf of Faith. He is a Navy veteran, and as a result of his service, Drew suffers from PTSD, Meige syndrome, and has recently completed chemotherapy. He drinks Kratom tea as a part of his wellness routine. In November, the Department of Veterans Affairs evicted Drew and his wife and pets from their longtime home outside of Washington, D.C. He currently lives in Michigan and is in the early stages of planning a full-length documentary of his own about Kratom. How are you? You went through some turmoil a couple months ago, and how's everything going from that?
You know, life is getting better. I'm finished with chemo, hopefully for good. Now
I was gonna ask that.
We're still having to try to fight the banks over losing our home, but you know, that's gonna take probably several years. It's just not something that it's just a weird situation that we're trying to work. But life's better. Life's moving along.
Yeah. Well, that's good. And so you're in Michigan now?
I am. Yeah. My wife and I and our dogs and cat are living out here now.
I was going to ask if you got to bring the dogs and everything. That's good.
Yep. They're here with us.
So we don't have to go over everything I interviewed about before, but just for kind of like people who would listen that wouldn't read an article. So you're a Navy veteran and you take Kratom in part because of the conditions you got during your military service. Could you talk about that a little bit?
Absolutely. So, I was in the Navy. I started in 2003. I'd been living overseas. I came back to the U.S., joined the Navy at the ripe old age of 30, so I was a little bit older than your average recruit. Basically, my time in the Navy was almost straight deployed overseas, and, you know, along with military deployments come injuries many times, especially if you're deployed into, you know, certain war zones and other things like that.
Yeah.
My Navy service, though, in 2012 ended because in 2009 I had been stationed at Guantanamo, and while we were removing a detainee from his cell, he decided that he wanted, you know, it was a long day of many detainees trying to self-harm.
Oh, okay.
We couldn't allow that to happen.
Yeah.
He was restrained, and I wasn't really watching what he was doing, and he just proceeded to try to bite me. I moved my hands, and he started smashing his head into the floor, and we couldn't let that happen.
Okay.
So I kind of had to take one for the team, and in doing so, it destroyed my right wrist, caused a pretty severe nerve damage, and to this day, I don't have what most would consider a functional right hand. And I'm right-handed, so which makes it a little more difficult. And in my job in the Navy, you know, I was basically armed 24/7 except for that deployment at Guantanamo. And you know, if you can't qualify with a firearm in the job that I worked in, you weren't going to last in the job. So in 2012, the Navy released me from service. And my health progressively deteriorated, not just from the hand injury, but also due to PTSD. And it turns out a lot of other issues that came along, a movement disorder that I developed a couple years after being discharged, they believe were, and the cancer that I've been fighting, they believe were attached to exposure to the burn pits in the Middle East while I was deployed there. So, for me, it wasn't the pain in my hand that caused me to seek out Kratom. It was actually this movement disorder. It caused severe stuttering. It caused severe muscle spasms through my face and my neck to the point where I couldn't even speak when it would be really kicking in. And a lot of it's linked to the PTSD as well as other neurological issues going on. So then we had to move on to medications. You know, I was taking anti-inflammatories and some things for my PTSD, but not much. But as this developed, they had to start trying all these different medications in 2013, 2014 to address this issue. Well, the movement disorder I developed, there really wasn't a lot of medications that would work for it. And because it's a fairly rare movement disorder, there just isn't a, you know, it's basically guinea pigging and trying whatever medication they can use for movement disorders to see what works.
Yeah.
And sadly, nothing worked.
Mm-hmm.
So I wound up having to leave my job with the federal government. That's what I had done after I got out of the military. I worked for the federal government for almost 2 years. But I wound up having to leave that job because there was just no way to functionally work with the movement disorder. And so we spent several years trying to find a solution to get me back into a place where I could be a functional member of society.
Yeah.
We never found that with the medication.
Mm-hmm.
So in 2015-ish, I don't remember the exact month. I believe it was like March, but it may have been April or May. I was at a point where my doctor basically knew that I had lost hope.
Mm-hmm.
I was at that point, and when you've got, you know, military service members lose hope a lot. That's part of one of the reasons why we have 22 a day on average committing suicide.
Yeah.
And I think my doctors realized that. And they saw that the medication just wasn't doing what we expected. I had basically become a shut-in. I just couldn't do much. I couldn't functionally drive at that time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's tough to go from being this big, strong military member that's doing all of these things and traveling the world to basically a couple years later being trapped in your home and losing hope.
Yeah.
So my doctor really started challenging me, and he said, look, we need to find something. He goes, let's look at something else. He goes, what about we stop the medications or at least taper you off some of them? And he goes, and let's try something different. He goes, maybe let's try yoga, or maybe let's try acupuncture, or maybe let's try, you know, herbal teas, or, you know, he just threw out a lot of different things. He goes, we could try cannabis. We could, you know, but because he was a VA doctor and a federal employee, he couldn't recommend cannabis.
Yeah.
And he couldn't recommend a lot of the other things that work. You know, now there's some studies into psilocybin, you know, for PTSD and for other things. And, and that was my biggest issue, was addressing my anxiety and PTSD that we found out later caused a lot of the movement disorder. Not all of it, but it definitely exacerbated the situation.
Yeah.
So I spent several months really heavily looking, reading online, getting onto Reddit, getting onto, you know, Blue Light, getting onto any of the forums online I could find that talked about things people were trying to address movement disorders and to address PTSD and anxiety, and because I knew that I was running out of time. And when I say that, I'm physically saying that I was on a path to suicide.
Yeah.
There's not a question in my mind that was the direction I was headed.
Yeah.
So the funny part was I kept reading, and in the same places I'd read about people using marijuana for things and CBD for things, I kept seeing this word kratom popping up. You know, at that time, we hadn't reached the national outcry, you know, where the DEA tried to ban it in 2016,
mm-hmm.
the FDA then after, you know, the next 2 years put the pressure onto the community to make it a Schedule One. So it was still kind of an underground thing, but not completely underground. It definitely wasn't as widespread as you see it today here in the U.S.
Yeah.
You know, you definitely weren't driving down the street in most areas and seeing signs out in front of stores, you know, advertising kratom at that time.
Yeah, yeah. I've just noticed that, like, in the past year, it's a lot more frequent.
Right, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I see it here in Michigan especially, I see it all over the place, which is, it's kind of amazing to see.
Yeah.
And I try to stop at a lot of these stores and talk to a lot of the people that own them to see what got them involved and what they're doing to help raise, you know, awareness about natural products.
Yeah.
But, you know, at that time, I kept seeing it, but I'll tell you, I kept seeing so many things related to the use and consumption of kratom that I said, you know, this sounds like snake oil, because if this was real, why hadn't I heard of this before? That was my thinking. And I suspect a lot of people, as they first start trying kratom or hear about it, that's that same thinking. And it's kind of embarrassing to look back and say, man, why didn't I have this faith? But you're just not, you know, it's not something that we're developed for the most part here in this country, at least, to have that idea that natural things can play a beneficial role in your wellness.
Yeah.
So it took me a while. It took me a while to really kind of come around, and even some time talking with my doctors, and we had to spend time looking for basically any study we could find at that time, because my doctors wanted to know more. But one of the benefits was, in 2015, there also wasn't this huge misinformation campaign, you know, from the likes of people like, you know, Gottlieb at the FDA.
Mm-hmm.
And so the doctor kind of looked at the safety profile of it and said, you know, it doesn't look like this will be harmful. He said, but we've got to get you off all these medications first, because do you want to try this? And I said, you know, I got nothing left to lose. Why not?
Mm-hmm.
So he of course, he couldn't provide it to me. He couldn't track it down for me, but we spent some time kind of reading as much as we could and trying to find out what to look for in a reputable kratom vendor. I still didn't know much at that time. And so, you know, we kind of just rolled the dice and saw what we got. And the first kratom product I found was a company out of Texas. I don't even know if they're still in business, but they had a tincture that they sold. And I said, you know, maybe this will be an easy way of trying it. Let's buy this. So I bought this tincture. Either I didn't know how to administer it, or it just wasn't very well made. But basically, after trying this tincture, I was back at that mode of, oh, wow, this is snake oil. This stuff doesn't work.
Yeah, yeah.
And it didn't do a thing for me. And I said, you know, man, I really spent a lot of time, you know, on this, and I really had hoped this was going to be the thing for me. And at that point, it wasn't. But, my doc kind of backed it up, and he said, look, he goes, this is just one company's product. Maybe it wasn't well made. He goes, let's not read too much into this. He goes, you don't want to lose that hope. We need to find something to keep you going.
Mm-hmm.
And so while I was a little let down about it, I said, you know, that's probably not a bad idea. I don't know enough about this. Let me look around a little more. Let me ask around a little bit more. And I did, and I didn't, you know, and finally I there was a lot of people recommending this one company at the time. And so I ordered some from another company, but just powdered kratom.
Yeah.
And within a couple of days of trying this product from this company, it was a night and day difference. You know, the wellness that it promoted was incredible. I don't want to say, okay, it's only kratom that does these things for my health, because that's not really true. I do spend a lot of time working on my health. But at that time, it kind of directed me down a different path, you know, mm-hmm. and it gave me reasons to get off of all these medications that I was taking. There was something in the neighborhood of 20 different medications I took at that time, or that I was prescribed.
Yeah.
You know, and today, just 5 years later, I generally only have a prescription for one medication, but I haven't even refilled that prescription that I get for cluster headaches in months. So,
wow, that's great. I think when I interviewed you last year, you said you only have about 2 pints of tea, and with about 5 grams each in them. Is that still the case?
1 to 2 pints. Yep.
Yeah, yeah. So is it, and it continues to work as well as you did? Because you said you go off of it once a month for a couple days. Is that true?
Right, right. Okay. Yeah, I generally, you know, try to take a break for several days each month, just to kind of ease my body out, you know, and I don't know for sure that it does anything. You know, I've mentioned, talked to people about this cleanse idea, and, you know, and you know, again, it's kind of like the whole snake oil idea. I don't know for sure that that's what keeps things going for me, but, you know, I'm not spending, you know, I haven't increased the amount of kratom I'm consuming over this time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there is days that I will maybe drink a little bit more kratom tea than others, due to pain issues or anxiety or, you know,
yeah,
certain things that it definitely helps, has a calming effect for me, which is a huge part of feeling better.
You released those videos a couple, I think it was during when the DEA was trying to ban kratom in 2016, and it showed what happened to you after 6 days of not taking it. Was that just part of your regular routine, or did, like, do you have to go through that once a month, or did you do that purposely to show people how it helps?
I know where my body hits that wall, and that wall's at about day five and day six. That's why I generally take about a 4 to 5 day break each month. And we're not still to this day really sure if it's an anxiety and PTSD reaction buildup that has been kind of underlying, or if it's the actual movement disorder that kind of reappears. We don't really know, because it's not like, you know, you see people that have certain movement disorders that can vape some, you know, cannabis products, and it just shuts it off. Now, that doesn't work for me. I can't just, you know, once I hit that wall, I'm going to have a few days that are going to be very rough for me, because the movement disorder comes back.
Yeah. And that's the Mays, you know, syndrome, right?
Yes, yeah, Mays syndrome.
And that's the dystonia is the movement disorder. Yeah.
Correct.
So, I mean, so this is about, I mean, but this happens about once a month, or was, or is it, does it
sometimes? No, that's why I, you know, like I said, that's why I limit it to about 4 to 5 days, because I know where that wall comes up.
Okay, I understand.
And so I make sure that I don't go, you know, there's only a certain amount, you know, I could go 10 to 15 days without taking kratom. That's not an issue to me. The issue comes in is that my anxieties and my PTSD and everything else starts to kind of come back out of the closet on me.
Yeah.
And then it kind of ramps up my movement disorder, the Mays syndrome, and then next thing you know, I'm a bobblehead.
Okay, here's another question. How did, this is completely different, but how did Chris Bell get in touch with you for Leaf of Faith?
I suspect one of my videos was given to him.
Yeah, that's what made me think of it.
I honestly don't know. I don't remember, you know, I haven't talked to Chris in well over a year now, but I don't remember, you know, out of nowhere, I got a message from him, I think on Facebook, and he said, "Hey, this is Chris Bell. I was wondering if you'd be interested in, you know," and we had a couple of conversations on the phone, and then he out of nowhere came out to, you know, well, not out of nowhere. He let me know in advance. He said, "Hey, I'm coming out to DC because I'd like to fit you in there." And so I said, "Yeah, sure." So he came out to DC. We did that, and then he went and interviewed Congressman Pocan that same day. And then that afternoon, while me and him were doing our walking around, one of the things you don't see on the video is we got to discussing him being on Joe Rogan before. And so that afternoon, he texted Rogan and said, "Hey, I need your help. I need back on the show. We need to raise awareness." And that was kind of funny. It was that conversation, you know, reminded Chris that, hey, he needed to get Rogan involved.
So
not a week later, he's out back out there in California, back on Joe's show.
And it's funny how I watch Rogan, and he doesn't really talk about kratom that much. I think one time he said, "I took like 8 capsules before I worked out, and it got me high." And
well, you know,
I was like,
here's what I have to say about the word high.
Yes.
I think it's all in the context. And I don't think that Joe's using it in a bad context.
Yeah.
I think he's just he's kind of explaining what he perceives as the definition of the word. You know, it's not a word I would use, but Joe Rogan's not an activist for kratom legalization. He's there to raise some awareness, but that's not his focus. And so, you know, what he's there to do is just to talk about what he perceives. And if he has some kind of a nice feeling from Kratom, you know, whereas a lot of Kratom activists, when he said that, they got a little bit upset because in their mind, they're like, oh, he's talking about being intoxicated. And I don't think that's what he, that sure didn't seem like what he was saying. He wasn't saying intoxication. He was just saying he felt really great. And that's a high. I mean, no matter how, you know, a lot of people hate the word, but it's an accurate word. I mean, he was dead on with it. It was a little bit cringy when it first was said, but then when you kind of realize what he's talking about.
I knew what he meant, too. It was just like, yeah, I was like, oh, this might be bad. Everybody worries about the communication and if it's bad for whatever. I don't know. But
the funny part is, Not once has that ever been brought up around the U.S. during any kind of news stories. You don't hear about any, you know, legislators in any states trying to ban it, talking about what, you know, and you'd think if it was really a big concern, they'd want to point out that this guy with tens of millions of followers and, you know, this multimillionaire is talking about getting high on Kratom when they realized that that's not really what he was talking about.
Yeah,
he was
just
saying that he kind of realizes that if you take a little bit more than your average, you know, your average consumption amount, you're probably going to feel a little bit more from it. And so you kind of got to be careful with what you're doing.
That goes with this other question I had written down, but you, and I asked you this for our other interview, you talk a lot about how sometimes people overstate Kratom safety, actually, which is on kind of the other side of that coin. You know, for example, there's a multiple drug issue that Kratom might exacerbate the effects of other drugs. So I've said it a few times, but probably two podcasts ago, I mentioned it. Like, I don't even like to take Kratom when I'm drinking alcohol.
Right.
So it's, if you want to talk about that at all.
We don't know enough about interactions. We don't know enough about the interactions between Kratom and Valium. We don't know enough about the interactions between Kratom and ibuprofen. We don't know enough about the interactions between Kratom and caffeine. You know, that's even a bigger one because one, at least one of the Kratom alkaloids acts on the same receptors that caffeine does. You know, the adenosine receptors that bring you some of that energy, and that's why there's some energetic use. But we don't know what interaction may be there by drinking a lot of Kratom tea and at the same time drinking a lot of coffee. We just don't know. You know, and that's something we definitely need to find out. And, you know, and so we absolutely need to see as much scientific research funded as possible. We absolutely need it. But that isn't to say that it doesn't already exist. There is a lot of information out there. And there's a lot of anecdotal information out there that if you spend enough time bringing it together, you can kind of read through a lot of the, you know, man, this stuff's cool. This is my first time trying it. And you can get to the point where you reach the people that have been using it consistently for 3, 5, 7, 10, 20 years without any kind of medical issues.
Yeah.
But we need more studies. We absolutely need some real human studies. Mm-hmm. And in the future, that's going to happen. There's, you know, there are different researchers out there that are on that path to having the funding and the permission to do human studies. It's not like something they can just do. You know, you still have to go to the government and say, look, this is what our plans are, you know, because there are risks involved with every human study.
Even in, I think Thailand, University of Malaysia did, it was human studies, but it wasn't really closely. It was more like they got a bunch of Kratom tea drinkers and they conducted a survey over a period of time.
Yep.
And all of those,
those are really solid. Yeah, Singh and his team at University of Malaysia, that kind of stuff's solid.
Yeah.
You know, and the other big thing is now that Thailand is legalizing Kratom for basically all use, or at least medical use for now, and, you know, possibly open use, we'll probably get even more long-term information as time goes along. And we also may find out about some differences in how it's grown and what that does to cause the alkaloidal differences, you know, where it's being grown in Thailand versus Malaysia versus Indonesia, and also how they consume it, you know, because here in the U.S., we, the majority of people here in the U.S. don't consume it in what's considered the traditional way. The traditional way is making strained teas.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in Malaysia, that's, you know, I was talking with friends that I've met, you know, since doing activism. One time we were talking about how it's used here in the U.S. because they didn't really know. They work there in Malaysia, and it's where it's technically illegal, but they don't really enforce anything. And so they said, you know, there's a lot of workers that drink it, and they basically would make these just giant pots of kratom tea, you know, and, yeah, and it would sit and simmer on the stove for 6, 8, 10 hours or more, and, yeah, you know, and concentrate down, and then they would make these drinks with it. Whereas we don't really do that. Most of the people are just shoveling powder or popping capsules because it's a little more easy and less time consuming than what they would do there.
Yeah.
But they're also using, you know, leaves right from the tree. They're not using the dried leaves. And so we don't even know,
mm-hmm,
if the alkaloid profile is that close between, you know, what we're getting from Indonesia and what the Malaysians are studying, but it's pretty similar. And we do know that some of the research that's here in the U.S. is also getting samples directly from Malaysia. So, you know, at least we know that the research that's going on is going to be a little more accurate.
Because I see how you make it. You use kind of the leaf material. Is that right?
Correct. Yeah, I basically, yeah, only get crushed leaf these days.
I've always made a tea. I don't use it that much, but I've always, sure, made a tea. Because I think toss and wash is kind of like, I think to the traditional drinker, it'd be like doing toss and wash with coffee or something like that.
Right. Right.
So you were in the process of making your own documentary, People,
right,
of the Plant. And I know,
right,
you, since all the stuff you had to go through with being evicted, you had to put that on hold. But
right,
just tell us about what your vision is for that and maybe who you're working with and what do you plan on,
you know,
doing for that once you can get it back going.
Right. So last year I had planned to do the People of the Plant, you know, part one basically was to cover Kratom, but then I was going to do, you know, further movies, and they were going to be open sourced where you don't have to have Netflix to have them and you don't have to go buy something. It'll just be there on YouTube for you to watch. And so that's why we were having to do, you know, open funding. But as that was going along, you know, I started to have some mental health crises, partly due to the problems that we were experiencing fighting to save our home.
Yeah.
And then you add in, you know, my
cancer,
PTSD and other issues. And
yeah,
I wound up spending about a week inside the mental health ward at the DCVA. And as I came out, I realized, you know, maybe this isn't a good time for this situation. I need to address my personal health issues. And at the same time, I still need to keep trying to do what I can to save my home. Well, that wound up, you know, not working out, and we wound up losing our home. And I was still having to deal with a third cycle of chemo. So I just, it was just bad timing. And so we just canceled, you know, all the funding. We didn't take any funding from anybody. We just said, you know, we're going to stop the funding now. Hopefully we'll do it in the future. Now,
yeah,
I still hope to do that. There's definitely not a question. Today, I don't know when. You know, I'm only a few weeks out of my final dose of chemo from this third cycle.
Oh yeah,
and I'm still trying to sort out where we're going to live long term. You know, we're trying to get life back on track to where I could handle making a movie with a group of people.
Yeah,
but my hope is that in another year or so, that'll be back on track. You know, and maybe that'll even be better that we're slowing it down, because we would be doing the movie right now. That was our plan, is right now we would be probably about halfway through our filming. And this way, at least we have a little more time to set aside, and we wait to see what Thailand does, because it would be great to be able to go to Thailand and film without worry of being arrested.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, because I saw that. I think it's great that you're actually planning on going to Southeast Asia, because there hasn't really been anything, a solid study of the farmers,
sure,
down there on film. There's been a few things that Vice thing. That guy went to Thailand and and you know, went deep into the woods on Vice. Right. Forget what his name was.
Yeah, and oh yeah, Hamilton.
Hamilton's Pharmacopoeia. Yep. Yeah, that's it.
Uh-huh.
And he did that. That was pretty cool. But I would just, and I've watched, there's a lot of videos of, you know, guys taking them with their phone, like vendors from there. But yeah, it'd be nice to see a good documentary about that side of it, for sure.
You know, and that's still my hope. But for now, I've got to, you know, I'm just trying to get my health back in order. And then I want to, you know, hopefully I'll get to help out here, because Michigan's still kind of on the precipice of legal, not legal.
Schedule 2.
Protection Act or something else, you know. And so, you know, now that I'm here and we're starting to get settled, hopefully I'll be able to help folks out, like, you know, like Melody and.
Yeah,
the folks at the AKA that are, you know, leading the charge here in Michigan, that if they need my help, I'm definitely going to be there to help them in any way I can. So that's definitely my hope. And it'll get me kind of back on my feet, because it's been a while since I've done any kind of interviews. It's been a while since I've been involved in the community really at all, because I just needed this time to get things back straight. But I'm definitely feeling that that happiness and that motivation coming on that I've had in the past, you know. And so hopefully I'll be able to find some folks around here that I can help out, or in, you know, or in nearby states where they may need some extra voices to come in that are used to doing this kind of lobbying, and then in the future, you know, find a way to see that film become a reality.
And on your Twitter profile, it says happiness is a cold hole in the ground.
Yep.
So what does that mean? I always kind of was curious about that.
You know, it's a lot of people think that it's touching on suicide. You know, like it's pushing on death, and it's really not. It's you know, I spent a lot of time basically years ago out in the woods hunting, and I spent a lot of time learning to dig holes in the military. And so it was kind of just in that mindset of, you know, being cold and miserable is not always the worst thing. You know, and so true happiness can come in a cold hole in the ground. I know that it kind of catches people off guard at times, because they read that and they go, oh my God, is he talking about suicide? And I'm not. That one definitely, I've had my own brushes with suicidal issues in the past, but that one, that statement is definitely something else. It's more just me kind of talking about past life experience and you know, even being, you know, in a hole in the ground cold is not the worst thing in life.
There's always going to be suffering, but you could find
Absolutely.
Happiness.
That's
find
exactly
happiness.
It. There's always going to be suffering.
But what is there anything else you want to talk about?
You know, I just want to, you know, as many others have come on your show and talked about, anybody listening, get involved. You know, do whatever you can do. If that means making a donation, great. If that means getting on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and other social media and raising awareness about things like your life stories, get those out there. If that means making videos for YouTube, get those out there. If you can, put your feet on the ground and get out there and speak to your legislators and lawmakers in your area, because typically we're seeing most of the ban pushes coming at the city and state level. And the only people that can really make an effect are the people that live in those cities and states. And so if you're listening to this right now and you're saying, hey, what can I do to help? Get out there and meet your legislators, even if they're not from your party, even if they're not, if they're independents, if they're Republicans, if they're Democrats, if they're socialists, if they're libertarians, if it doesn't matter. Go out and meet them, find out what their stance is, and make sure they're getting all the information, because that's the way we keep this plant legal.
Thank you, Drew. Check out Drew Turner on Twitter at DrewTurner73. He's a really good kratom activist to follow if you want to learn stuff about this plant. The music is by Risey. The song is called Memories of Thailand. This is written and produced by me, Brian Gallagher, for KratomScience.com. Take care.